Welcome to episode 416 of Troubadours and Raconteurs with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. On this week's episode, we have regular contributor, writer, musician, global hobo, and our resident social critic, talking with us from his humble abode in the south of France, JQ. JQ and I discuss the COVID-19 lockdowns in France, protecting people's economic interests, restaurants, masks as a political act in the U.S., political correctness and how it might lead to the demise of civilization. We talk about tribalism, sensitivity, empires, and unity, too. A grand conversation with JQ. We have an EW essay titled Faith. We share some actual findings as gathered and published by Harper's Magazine in their April 2021 edition. And we have a poem called Lullaby. All of this, of course, will be imbued, infused with the wonderful energy of several great tunes. It is so nice to have you with us. Let's get to it. Episode 416 of Troubadours and Raconteurs.
Bye.
faith. You have to work to feel good. I heard about this great man who drank a lot of booze until eventually he could not find happiness anymore. I read about this simple, kind woman who meditated for hours every day and became lost in a wormhole of suffering. The love and beauty, strength and courage, heart and soul of this life, in this life, come from your faith and your practice. Wisdom is everything at its essence, with lightness, so that it carries, and with substance, so that it will complete the journey from generation to generation. Open yet clear and approachable, pedestrian, without contempt or resentment, pure and egalitarian. Once there was a way to get back home. Now I wander and roam, looking at the cumulus clouds in the sky accumulate and disperse from one another without a worry as to why. Perhaps because there is no mind there, only nature's spirit of ecology, the poetic machinations of our sun, and we its moon, and to the moon that is inspiring me to howl with imprecise yet fairly consistent frequency throughout the months and years. All of this must mean something, or else the seemingly overwhelming emptiness unleashes debilitating fear. And therein lies the rub, Western sisters and brothers, Eastern fathers and mothers. All unity resides, regardless, right here. Life as a soulful creature, so quick, so deep, so shallow, so near, and we breathe in and out so that the world might bear witness. Though each one bestows, all as important and clear as a robin's song, while feasting on a wild, lush, green patch of grass.
Stops until you do. Blame stops until you do. Do your major duty and crawl right back again. Time gets to me and I. The heir apparent just might try. You know you should be winning.
You die and be successful.
got the nerve. It doesn't take much nerve. Just kiss yourself metaphorically and open the door and piss if you need to. Gonna get it when it's hot. Come and get it, ready or not. If it's in your grips, it's your feminine trip. Rebel.
JQ, is that you?
It is, EW. Greetings, how are you?
Oh, wonderful. It's great to have you on Troubadours and Rock on Tours yet again. Writer, musician, global hobo, and our resident social critic here on the program, talking with us from his humble abode in the south of France, JQ. So, how's it going in the south of France?
Well, we just entered lockdown again, you know, and it already kind of felt like lockdown before going into it because I, you know, things over here are quite different. Like restaurants here haven't been opened since September. Mm. And but we're back to the thing where you have to fill out a document every time you go out of the house. That says where you're going, and you basically, you know, self-police, but you have to, you can do it on your phone. And so it's set up so that it come, you know, when you go to the site, your name and your address and everything is already there. And then you just sort of plug in the time you're going, and then you have to choose from a list of reasons that you're going out and for how long. And it should be within 10 kilometers of your house, which when you live out in the countryside, like I do, is kind of silly.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, because every, you know, your neighbor is 8 kilometers away. So, I mean, it's we're back in lockdown, and you know, it just seems to never end.
Do you agree with it? Do you agree with the policies put in place to counter the pandemic in France?
Well, no, not really. But at the same time, I'm fortunate to not be the person in the position making decisions and trying to please everybody. But from the very beginning, I mean, if you really want to get through the pandemic and have a lockdown, then you have to protect people economically. And they're not doing that. They're doing that a little better in France than you have over there, for instance, for salaried workers, for companies and various things like that, continued to get paid. But anybody who's independent, and among them restaurant owners who have been shut down since October, except for takeout, you know, there's nothing. There's nothing for you. And I believe we've talked before about the fact that the money is there and billionaires are profiting massively, you know, as are the banks and a lot of major corporations profiting massively off the lockdown.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. So somebody added up, like you might remember when this all started, there was a stock market crash, but now they have that emergency like bat button for the stock market that they can just sort of hit and shut it down. They didn't have that before, which is why 2008 was a bit of a problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
So now they had this thing and they used it. And then immediately the government under Trump, you know, infused all this money into the banks. And it was something on the order of $23 trillion to stabilize the stock market, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or no, I'm sorry, $2.3 trillion. Sorry, that's a big difference.
Once you get to the trillions, does it really matter anymore?
Yeah, you wonder. I mean, that many zeros, who's counting at that point? But
I get excited if I have $230 in my pocket.
Tell me about it. Yeah, yeah. And dollars are worthless here. So, and I still get excited. but $2.3 trillion into the stock market, then they opened it up again. And immediately, you know, first of all, that begs the question, where did this money come from? But let's not even go there. And then they open the stock market up, crash, they hit the bat button again, you know, they shut it down, and eventually things sort of stabilized. But that $2.3 trillion invested, it basically went up in smoke in the stock market, you know, in an attempt to stabilize it. And somebody did the math afterwards and was like, look, if you had simply taken that money, which God knows where it came from, and invested it and given it out to working age Americans, right, between, you know, post, not students, anybody out of college, anybody eligible who was just a working age American. And, you know, it came out to 100 and some odd million people. And it meant people would have roughly anywhere from 18, it was something like $17,000 to $20,000 each per individual, which means for a couple, you know, that's $34,000 or $40,000, right? You want to get through the pandemic, that's how you invest the money at the beginning instead of trying to save the stock market, and you really, truly shut everything down except for necessary services, and especially you shut down the schools. That's, they have just now shut down the schools again in France, which they had to do in England a few months ago, I think around Christmas. They haven't been back to school, and things are doing much better there because that is the main problem. It's the schools, you know.
How so? How is it the main problem? Because of the transmission, you mean? Or because of...
Yes, because of the transmission of the virus. Yeah, yeah. That's one of the biggest things is schools. I mean, when the medical professionals give you the top three, the schools is number one, really. Because the kids go and they get it. They don't have symptoms. They bring it home. They give it to everybody, you know.
Well, it's kind of like...
That's how it went for a long time.
When you talk about the money getting into people's pockets, we had a presidential candidate, Yang, right? Andrew Yang, who was all about that, you know, the regular...
Universal basic income.
Yeah, universal basic income, exactly. And what do you think about the Biden administration and the Democrats exclusively passing the bill into law where there's COVID relief money going into people's pockets here in the United States?
Yeah, you got how much was it? A $1,200 check? What was it?
It depended on your income. I think if you were below, if you had $75,000 as an individual or $150 as a couple, I believe it was about $1,800. I think. Am I thinking? Is that correct? I don't even. I'm like a rain man with money. I got some because I don't make that much money, but it all goes directly into my wife's account. Then she just gives it to me when I need it.
You have an allowance.
Yeah. Well, you know. Yeah. I prefer it that way. It's a significant amount, though. You know, that people received. The price tag for the whole bill was again. A significant amount, especially when compared to the Obama stimulus package. And I'm wondering if you believe that that was a nice move from your perch there in southern France, you know, the country that you're connected to here, the United States, of your government to help out the everyday folks.
Sure. Look, people are happy to get anything, right? But here's the fact. The average rent in America is something like $1,400, right? And it's every month. So that's great, you know, and it was a very nice gesture, and not a single Republican voted for it. But that's, look, the economic fallout from all of this is still ahead, right? We're already seeing a lot of it.
But by the way, it was $1,400. I just looked it up. $1,400, yeah. And $1.9 trillion altogether.
Right, right, which is great, but there's a lot of different ways to help people out, but I don't know. If you guys have a state by state sort of quarantine thing going on and everything is different everywhere, so it's very hard to talk about the United States. A federal program is going to be more helpful in states that are doing other things to compensate and to help out, or that you see, and lockdown works very different over there as well. Like, I know in Pennsylvania, you've already, like, restaurants are opening back up now, right?
Restaurants, yeah, they're opening back up. And it's it's a mixed bag of responses, you know, on an individual level, too. And it often is looked at as a political move, whether you wear a mask in particular or not, you know. You can tell a person's politics, it seems, to a great extent, whether or not they wear a mask. And it's strange, you know, it's strange because some communities are wearing them, some are not.
Yeah. And that's a, well, the way in America everything now gets turned into an issue, and you choose a team, and you're on that team, and there's no middle ground or rational dialogue. You know, everything is pretty much like that. The way we discuss politics in America simply is beyond illogical. Nothing makes any sense anymore. I mean, you don't really have a left anymore in America at all. You have two different parties representing different versions of corporate capitalism, and one of them is completely insane, and the other is, if it was in Europe, would be considered right wing.
Democrats,
particularly on economic issues, you know, because the sort of ultra capitalism that you have in America, it's seen differently here. And you know, somebody like Bernie Sanders is a sort of center leftist in the countries that he talks about, like the Nordic countries, or even here in France. Bernie Sanders is nothing radical. Nothing he's proposing is radical. So it's hard to talk about politics in America because they're so unique. The Overton window is so far to the right over there. And the Republicans are, they represent nothing. Really, but
no, they're vapid. Now, when you say the Overton window, expand on that. What do you mean by that?
Well, the Overton window is basically a way of defining where the center is politically.
The Overton window,
and where the extreme left is and where the extreme right is, and in America, the Overton window has been shifting to the right very steadily since pretty much the Reagan Thatcher years, right? Where a lot of things that were completely off the table. In terms like, you know, the Glass-Steagall Act, breaking down the wall that separated investment banking from commercial banking.
Got
that
it.
Is now on the table. Offshore banking has exploded fiscal paradises and all that sort of thing. It's not only on the table, it's common practice. And those are right-wing practices. The tax programs, the trickle-down economics is still around, no matter how many times it's proven that it doesn't work. So that's what I mean when I say that the Overton window, basically the political scale, the spectrum from left to right and where the center is in America is and particularly on economic issues, tax policy and things like that, it's way to the right. Social issues, it's different. But one thing the Democrats do very artfully and the corporate powers that buy the Democratic politicians is they get you talking about social issues as though they're political issues. And that's a huge problem.
Mm-hmm.
And the political correctness and this and that.
I know you want to get into political correctness. And we, you know, if you want to use this as a segue to go there. Excellent. I just wanted to mention one more thing. You know, your buddy Biden.
My buddy.
He's your buddy. Well, you're both from the same part of the world. You're both from northeastern Pennsylvania. He is proposing now in the Democrats a $3 trillion infrastructure bill. And the things that he's calling infrastructure, some folks are saying, really stretches the definition of infrastructure, you know, like schools and things of that nature.
Yeah.
What do you think? I think that's a step in the right direction, moving us more to the center, perhaps?
Yeah, it's not bad. No, look, Biden has a lot of pressure coming from the left within the party. And so he is trying to appease that. He himself, he's sort of a pure politician. This is a guy who bragged about trying to get rid of Social Security, supported every single war. He's quite a hawk, actually, and always has been. So the fact that he's making these moves, I don't know. He's older. He's undergone a change, perhaps. I don't know. Is it a good move? It's a pretty good move. Yeah, it's interesting to see it happening. And I think he has a lot of political capital because of the devastation of the Trump years, and I think he should use it. So great. Yeah.
Excellent. Nice to hear your take, our social critic, JQ, here on the program. So you mentioned to me in a text that basically political correctness, in your view, potentially is the death of 2,000 years of what we call Western culture or civilization.
Okay, I may have overstated the case, but that is my way. All right. Well, let's go into this slowly. Political correctness, first of all, is not new. People act as though it's something that's only been around for a short time. And we were talking about political correctness back in the late 80s, early 90s. It was a big deal, right?
Yeah, Bill, on college campuses. Remember Bill Maher's show?
Which is from like the mid-90s. It was called Politically Incorrect.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. And so it's been around for quite a while. And basically it is a plethora of ideas and social ideas that get politicized that grew out of a very necessary political thing, civil rights, right? The civil rights movement. It begins there. It begins with, you know, the civil rights movement in the 60s, feminism, equal pay for equal work, and all these sorts of things, gay rights, et cetera, giving people equal rights, equal access to the advantages of our society, giving that to groups that, for the dumbest reasons, tend not to get those rights. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
From that evolves the whole debate around political correctness. But here's the problem with the point it's gotten to. When I talk about 2,000 years of Western civilization, there is something unique about Western civilization that is very valuable. People tend to say, well, you know, modern Western civilization is the product of Judeo-Christianity plus Rome, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is some truth to that. Now, what is unique about Western culture, if you go back, and what is unique really about Christianity as a religion, is that its emphasis is not, for instance, as it is in Eastern religions, in Buddhism, in most branches of Hinduism, the individual soul, right, your psyche, your thoughts, your emotions, your inner self, is actually something that you're supposed to annihilate, which is what, you know, nirvana is. It's annihilation, right? It's something you're supposed to overcome to gain enlightenment, a higher level of consciousness. Christianity says that the individual, not the group, not the tribe, and not some higher level, the individual is the thing that needs to be saved.
The right.
Individual soul. That's unique. Okay. You can draw a straight line from that through the Magna Carta, through Les Droits de l'Homme in France, the American Constitution. All men are created equal. Individual rights, the individual vote, as being the prime mover of political systems. The individual is what matters, is what is supreme. Now, as an individual, the fact that you are a human being, that was the ideal, even from the beginning. If you go back and read Thomas Paine, you find proto-feminism. You can go back to the transcendentalists that were, and the abolitionists that were working in the 19th century, that were already proto-civil rights workers before the civil rights movement. This, because the individual, this is the basis of our civilization and how we function and democracy and even capitalism and the idea of the individual consumer. Right? It's all based on the value of the individual, which is unique and a new development in thousands and thousands of years of human history that creates our civilization. It even leads to the scientific method. Right? Nietzsche himself said Christianity, by putting its emphasis on the individual and on the truth, which shall set you free, eventually that was going to turn against Christian dogma, which is what happened, and it gave us the scientific revolution. Now that's a whole convoluted historical idea, but
and that's when God was dead.
Did he ever live? But little matter.
You're listening to Troubadours and Rock on Tours with E.W. Conundrum Demure on WFTE Radio, Mount Cobb and Scranton, Pennsylvania. Community radio at its finest.
The individual is prime. Okay, and what has happened with that idea, that's where the civil rights movement in a way comes from. That's where if you're an individual, you deserve equal access, equal pay, and equal opportunity, all of these things, right? But what has happened over the last few decades with political correctness is rather than your individual soul, your selfhood being the thing that actually matters, what is now more important is the group you belong to. And this is where we've tipped the scales in the other direction. And it's one of the main problems that is causing a lot of the rot on the left. We're allowing super important things like tax policy and, you know, economic issues to get put on the back burner while we talk about transgender issues and you know, even Black Lives Matter, obviously. And you have to support Black Lives Matter, right? But there's this philosophical and ideological tendency now where the group you matter to belongs more than more. Than the fact that you are an individual. And that, I'm not saying it's the end of 2000. That's a threat because it's a philosophical change. And even though I'm somebody who, if I take the, you know, these tests that they give, the metrics to measure where you land politically, I'm down in the neighborhood with like Noam Chomsky and people like that, right? But I see a great danger in political correctness. I don't see a danger in the social movements and in fighting for rights for people that don't have them. But it does tend to create a sort of new tribalism that we're seeing. And that is a great danger when we already have a society that is bipolarized, right, into you're on this team or on that team. And it's fractioning us further. And so what I'm saying is there's a threat there, and it's an ideological, philosophical threat. And people should really be very, very wary of that. And it's a hard thing to get out because immediately, because of the current climate, people start saying, oh, you're a racist, you're a sexist, you're this, you're that.
Anti-Semite. You know.
Right, whichever, choose your epithet. It becomes that very quickly. When you're, what you're trying to say is, no, I'm on your side, but take a look at this. This is important, right?
And that's because that's all in the name of protecting the individual right of a person to question, to speak over the collectivism that is working toward civil liberties for more people. They're too sensitive, and thus they're taking away those groups, those collective sort of efforts. They're too sensitive, and thus they're taking away or threatening the openness and the rights for an individual to question and to think and to speak what they are, you know, what's going on inside of them.
The fact that you're saying that means that you can probably think of a few examples off the top of your head where that's been the case, where there's cancel culture seems to be going a little crazy, or the fact that like a lot of our best stand-up comedians who many of whom, you know, some of them are sort of like they have an important voice, a Dave Chappelle, a Bill Burr. All right. They don't want to play college campuses anymore very often because they can't tell jokes. The sensitivity level is too high, and you're immediately accused of things, right? There's a lot of that going on. And I'm not saying, again, I'm just saying it is ideologically and philosophically dangerous. That's all. And that it should be looked at more carefully. I mean, what do you think of the question you just asked?
Well, it's very, it has so many layers. There are so many... So many contradictions almost in that sort of situation, because the collective effort to try to protect individuals of all sorts at the same time is sort of weakening an individual's right to be who they are.
Yeah. Yeah. And I also think it's a political smokescreen that it's very easy for somebody who is pretty much a right-wing politician, say a Hillary Clinton, and who didn't come out in favor of gay marriage until, you know,
right.
She had her finger to the wind and it shifted enough. Yeah. She was very, very late. I forget what year it was, but it was like 2012 or something or 13. She was very late coming out like pro-gay marriage, very late because she's a pure politician. And so what people like that will do is use these social issues in order to, you know, black people have been complaining about this for years, and they're right. The Democratic Party is treats them, you know, they'll say all the right things, but then you don't get the policies behind it. And that's the problem. So we can continue to like drain money out of the lower middle classes with our economic system and continue to practice trickle down economics and all these sorts of things. As long as we say the right stuff about particular politically correct social issues. And it's used by corporations to do advertising. It's used by politicians to steal votes, to get your vote, you know, not to steal it, but to
manipulate.
To throw dust in your eyes. And I see that it's sort of become common and accepted, really. And I think it's very, very dangerous. And when I say it's the end of 2000 years, you know, I mean, that's sort of pompous pronouncement. All I mean by that is that if you take a look at what the core sort of value that defines how Western civilization happened in the first place, and you go back to its roots in Christianity, and it is the salvation of the individual soul, which eventually evolves in secular terms into individual rights and the value of the individual vote and that type of thing. So when you begin to say that no, the individual is secondary and the group, the tribe that individual belongs to is primary in defining that person's identity, you've taken a very massive philosophical leap away from your own culture.
Exactly. Yeah. And it also kind of contradicts the root of where you're coming from, the essence of where you're coming from.
Yeah. And it can seem like a great abstraction, right? Mm-hmm. But here's the problem is that these things that we call abstractions are sort of, you know, the great ideas that move us are like the tectonic plates of the earth. They don't change much, but if they do, look out, because the surface is going to shake and you're going to get earthquakes, right? They are important, those abstractions and those generalizations. The first lines of the Declaration of Independence are extremely crucial. You know, go back and look at the Magna Carta, and the ideas are important.
What about
because they create the reality?
What about though? You know, the criticism that a lot of people throw at Western civilization as being maybe too self-absorbed, too designed to exclude those more ancient, I would argue, thoughts that come from the Eastern world, like the Tao, the I Ching, as you mentioned, Buddhism, Hinduism, and so on. Maybe the Western civilization has run its course.
Maybe.
Would that be okay?
Well, that would, there's not a lot we can do about it, right? If it's the case, it's way bigger than us. But a few things about that. First of all, it's a valid criticism, as is the fact that the part we're not talking about is Rome and our complete obsession with intruding into other cultures that has always existed. You know, empires are not all, well, actually, yes, they are, but they're expansive beasts, right? But have you heard of that book, Sapiens?
Yes, I have it here on my bookshelf. I haven't read it yet, but yes.
All right, there's a very interesting part in that where he talks about empires, and it's like, yeah, we criticize empires and imperialism and this and that, but everything you appreciate about, you know, human evolution, not everything, a lot of it comes from the fact that there were empires, because when we went out and colonized, for instance, well, we were curious about other cultures. Eastern culture has been massively influential on the West and has changed us, for instance. Some of our greatest thinkers of the last century that have the hugest impact, like a Carl Jung, for example, a Schopenhauer among philosophers, like these people are very much under the influence of the East. And so are more and more people. Now, we do our own thing with it. It gets changed when it comes into our culture. But there is an openness in Western culture, a curiosity toward the other that, you know, so we send in, you know, the missionaries and the soldiers and then this and that. But when Alexander the Great or Napoleon were going and conquering, they were also going out with botanists and archaeologists and historians and poets and painters and illustrators to get a record of everything. And, you know, so there's that as well. Western civilization is incredibly problematic. You know, we can spend weeks talking about all the devastation that it's caused. But that's not all it does. And a lot of what it has done is absolutely invaluable to human evolution. So, and that's the problem with empires. You look at most of the empires throughout history, it's they did a lot of building, and progress comes from that sort of centralized authority being able to make things happen. You know, it's one of the great political conflicts, centralized authority versus dispersed authority. The advantage of centralized authority is that it gets stuff done because there's only so many people deciding and it has instant power. The great problem of it is oppression, right?
Right.
So there's that.
And you know, when you look at cultures that come from the East, too, those empires were brutal as well, and they've done some heinous things over the millennium. the millennia.
Sure, humans are awful. I think the only difference is how much technology do you have? You know,
how much damage can you do?
Well, it's that. I mean, we don't get, you know, death camps and concentration camps and burning, like killing people in ovens until the Nazis in the 20th century. And we don't get Stalin because we didn't have the technology to do it. The barbarity was certainly there all along.
Right.
You know, we used to do all that killing by hand.
Right.
It was slow. It was hard work. Old school with a sword.
Right. And they did.
Before that, it was rocks.
Right. Catapulted. Right. Exactly. And the arrows and things of that nature. But as you mentioned, though, these empires did bring, like Genghis Khan, for example, and his grandchildren that followed, they brought a lot of cultures together. And the Roman Empire brought a lot of cultures together. Same in China. Brought a lot of cultures together, and then, you know, the fabric of humanity, of our species, becomes more more dynamic.
And this is the point of Sapiens. I think what you're leaning towards is that all of it, when you add it up, ultimately leads to more human unity. That is inevitably the direction that it all goes towards. Just look at the world today. It's unity. That is the tendency. There's no doubt about that. It is not division. It's unity, right? We just have to be careful along the way, because how much damage do you cause on the way? Well, so far, too much. But the tendency, empires have unified humanity. We are vastly more unified because we've had them. Jake, is that where you were going? I'm sorry
yes,
to cut you off.
No, I'm glad you went there. And I think that's a good place for us to pause our conversation until next time. Unity. I like it.
All right, brother.
JQ, it's always a pleasure. I'm going to share a song now. That you wrote and produced, was that, what is it called again? Hobo Mojo?
It's called Hobo Mojo, and it's a little manifesto. And that said, you know, that's an unreleased tune that I used to play with my old band. I have new band, new musicians, new stuff coming, new albums, but to be announced, TBA.
Excellent.
But for now, this track. Anyway, much love from the south of France, brother.
Thank you, brother. I hope to see you soon. Take care of yourself.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Time is money, they say. Is it? Make your mark, promote your brand, network, shake them hands, be wealthy, get famous, but everybody's medicated. It's a mess. We're all stressed. It's depressing. Time is money. All right. I've got one life. But a whole lot of questions, like, if time is money, that means life is cheap, so why fight to hold what you cannot keep? always yearning, always driven. Hold up, it's all the hold up, all the prophets told us. Now it's a long walk back to the soul. Just take it slow, yo, like a stone rope.
And now, some actual findings as gathered and published by Harper's Magazine for their April 2021 edition. Actual findings. Scientists hoped that positive climate tipping points might cascade across human societies. 4 decades of research on the Izu Islands indicated that the presence of the Japanese four-lined rat snake forces Okada's five-lined skinks to operate at higher body temperatures. Baby epaulette sharks may not survive as the seas around the Great Barrier Reef continue to warm, and unborn megalodon sharks practiced intrauterine cannibalism. Octopus rubescens was found to be resilient against rising ocean acidity. The Strait of Messina was determined to be the marine region richest in garbage. The authors of The Large Obliquity of Saturn Explained by the Fast Migration of Titan expected Jupiter's moons to tilt the planet's axis from 6 degrees to as much as 37 in the coming 5 billion years, noting that the planet, quote, adiabatically follows the drift of a secular spin orbit resonance with the nodal precision mode of Uranus. Dark matter can be neither ultralight nor super heavy unless it is acted upon by an as-yet-unknown force. A potent antibacterial peptide was identified in the skin of the Australian toadlet, and male platypuses were found to have 5 pairs of XY chromosomes. Emus, meanwhile, were found to possess W and Z sex chromosomes. A fossilized assassin bug discovered in 2006 and split down the middle was reunited with itself, revealing an intact penis. Scientists were surprised to learn that despite the strong correlation between male genital shape and reproductive success among fruit flies, sexual selection for those traits is relatively weak. Obese Yucatan miniature pigs were found to have as many as 35 episodes of sleep apnea per hour. Quote, "These are very fat pigs," explained the lead researcher. Sacatamia or Julia glass frogs, whose calls are often drowned out by waterfalls, wave their hands and feet and bob their heads to attract potential mates. Electric eels in a river-fed Amazonian lake were observed hunting cooperatively and corralling their prey into balls to be shocked. The global spark plug market was expected to grow rapidly over the next 5 years. Specialized voice training was found to improve the expression of joy in the vowel A. And researchers urged a re-examination of the Kondo effect. An international team of experts warned that humans will be unable to control super intelligent artificial intelligence. And Cornell researchers published an atlas of the winds. Actual facts. Put those in your cap.
two, take two. My brinyawa. Oh, sereni mi bioshe, ma promi. Oh, sereni mi bioshe, ma promi. Yami niki mama she, shoba. Babame niki mama she, shoba. Yami ni shokuku, mani sa ho, ho. Oh, sereni mi, ma brinyawa, ha 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 ho ho ho. O sereni mi magunyawa, o sereni mi magunyawa, ha 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 ha, o sereni mi magunyawa, pam de balala pam 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 de balala, o sereni mi magunyawa, o sereni mi miyoshi, ma komi, o sereni mi miyoshi, ma komi, yami niki mama shu shu. Baba mi ni ki mama se o sopo o ya mi ni shakuku mani o ha 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 o sereni mi magunyawa o sereni mi magunyawa o sereni mi magunyawa o sereni mi magunyawa o sereni mi pam develop 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 o sereni mi magunyawa.
Lullaby. Basketball round with stripes in the yard as a white diesel pickup truck rumbles by up the road. Wind chimes, rays of sunshine on a mountainside. The tweets and chatter of morning avians while an airplane draws a line above in the blue, white, gray sky. All such an endearing lullaby. And the weekend is just about here.
Thank you.
And there you have it, episode 416 of Troubadours and Rock on Tours, with yours truly, E.W. Conundrum Demure. I'd like to thank those folks who made this episode possible. First and foremost, J.Q. I also would like to thank Harper's Magazine and these musical artists: Stefan Grappelli, Django Reinhardt, yes, Stephen Malkmus and the Jicks, J.Q., the Miles Davis Sextet, Fela Ransome Kuti and Escula Lombitos, Courtney Barnett, Terrence Blanchard and Branford Marsalis, too. And of course, I'd like to thank you for listening. Until next time, let's give it a go and do our best with this time. Take care.